Okay, so with that introduction, let's start talking about tshuva, and specifically the tshuva of Elul. In general, there are two different Gemaras that talk about the nature or the halacha that 30 days kodem l'chag, any 30-day period prior to a holiday, you're supposed to delve into the topics of that holiday. So one Gemara is the Gemara in Pesachim that says 30 days before Pesach, you're supposed to start preparing for Pesach. And the other Gemara is at the end of Megillah, where the Gemara says that 30 days before a holiday, you're supposed to start, being shoalin v'dorshin on that subject. So the question is, are all of those instances the same? And what I mean by that is, we have many different holidays and many different 30-day periods before each holiday, right? So we have Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and we have Rosh Chodesh Elul, and we have all these 30-day periods before a holiday. Are all of them the same? Are they all just trying to prepare us for the holiday, to give us the proper mindset? They don't have intrinsic value, right? They're just they're only significant in relation to the fact that they are coming before a holiday. Or no, there are some that we could be mechalik between, that maybe Rosh Chodesh Nisan is one way, Rosh Chodesh Elul is a different way, before each holiday might have a different characteristic depending on the context. So I want to use that framework and that question to sort of analyze, Rosh Chodesh Elul and what it means and different perspectives on whether it's just a preparation for Rosh Hashanah or maybe something more significant and intrinsic in its own right. Is that good? Everyone understand the question? So generally, we think of Rosh Chodesh Elul as the beginning of the Yom Noraim season, the beginning of the Tshuva season of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and then eventually Sukkot, and that entire month of Tishrei. And there are two ways we could really explain how that would work, how that would fit in with that view. So either we could say we're preparing on a practical level. Halachically, 30 days before any holiday, we want to make sure we know the halachas, we know what to do, we have everything prepared, we have all the various chafetzei mitzvah that we need, whether it's a shofar, it's a lulav, it's the matzah, right? So every 30-day period before a holiday, including Rosh Chodesh Elul, is just a way of helping us prepare on a practical level. Pragmatically, right, we want to just make sure we have everything in order. And that takes time. You can't just wake up on Pesach morning or Rosh Hashanah morning and expect that everything's going to be in order. So you need a 30-day period in order to really prepare sufficiently. So that's one perspective. I think that's the most technical perspective on how do we view, these 30-day grace periods before a holiday. The second view, and this is more in the middle, would be to say, no, all 30-day holiday or prior to holidays are really the same. But they're the same, not just that we're preparing on a practical level, but we're preparing on a mental, more spiritual level. That similarly, you can't wake up on Pesach morning and expect that the Seder and everything's going to be in order, but you also can't expect that you're going to be able to appreciate everything about the holiday if you don't prepare at all. So if you want to fully appreciate everything, if you want to fully be immersed in the holiday, in the Chag, so you have to make sure that you learn the halachas, you learn the various svarim, and ideas and mesachtas pertaining to that holiday. So in both of those views, though, there's nothing unique about one period over another, right? Just like Rosh Chodesh, Nisan might be about preparing, cleaning the house, getting ready, or it's about learning Mesachas Pesachim and understanding what Chametz and Matzah means. The same is true for Rosh Chodesh Elul. We're preparing, we're making sure we have our various Sidurim that we're going to need, and Machzers, or we're preparing what does it mean to be Omed Lifnei Hashem on Rosh Hashanah. But there's nothing intrinsic to these 30-day periods itself. And this would seem to be the view of the Me'iri. The Me'iri in the Chibur HaTshuva, so the Me'iri has his Chidushim on Shas. He also has a sefer called the Magen Avos, which is his commentary on Perkei Avos. And also, if you look in any printed Me'iris, they usually have this thing called the Chibur HaTshuva, which was this, it's an essay, a compilation of different ideas the Me'iri had. It's like a very long work, kind of his recollections and thoughts on tshuva. It's kind of his version of like Hilchos Tshuva or Shari Tshuva. And it's a very amazing sefer. And so in his Chibur HaTshuva, he has an amazing chiddush. So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, on Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis, quotes a very pertinent pasuk about this period that we find ourselves in. Dirshu Hashem behinso, kirov yoso karov. That you should seek Hashem when He is close to you. That seems to be, a very important idea. So much so that the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says that is actually the source for the Aser Smei Tshuva. That you should try to be on a higher level. You should be more exalted and more careful in your mitzvah observance during that time, because there's a semblance of Hashem being closer to us in that time. Because Hashem is closer, you should try to reach out and bridge that gap and dirshu Hashem in that moment. But the Miri actually says that it's not only true of the Aseres Yemei Tshuva. It's also true the entire month of Elul. The entire month of Elul, from Rosh Chodesh until Rosh Hashanah, is a moment of Dirshu Hashem Behim Tzo'o. So he goes and expands the Gemara. But what the Meiri says is not just as important in its idea, but more important also in the Lashon, and the way he phrases, this Tshuva of Elul, this Dirshu Hashem Behim Tzo'o of Elul and Elul's Man. The Lashon of the Meiri is, why do we have to have this intense or immense focus, this special kavana during Elul of Dirshu Hashem Behim Tzo'o? He says, Kidei Shiachanis L'Rosh Hashanah B'Taras Halev. So the Meiri's Lashon is that the reason why you need this added focus or this added level of mitzvah observance during Elul's Man is Kidei Shiachanis L'Rosh Hashanah B'Taras Halev, in order to prepare you sufficiently for Rosh Hashanah, so that when you get to Rosh Hashanah, when Rosh Hashanah comes, you should be prepared, you should be in a state of purity, and your lev should be holy, and that will be more effective for Rosh Hashanah, as opposed to not preparing at all. So this would seem to fit with the perspective that the way we view Rosh Chodesh Elul is that it's not necessarily unique. Just like we would need to prepare for any holiday in order to arrive in a state of Taras Halev or proper Kavana, so too for Rosh Hashanah. And therefore the entire month of Elul is a month of Dirshu Hashem Behim Tzo'o. And not necessarily because anything intrinsic happened on Rosh Chodesh Elul. So that's all one view. Any questions? Awesome. The second perspective, though, is that there's something much more intrinsic to the month of Elul in and of itself. That there's something that happened that's meant to guide us to a state of tshuva, which is distinct and separate from the tshuva of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and it's meant to be the segue into that next level of tshuva of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Let me explain what I mean, if that's a little complicated. So the tour in the beginning of Hilchos Rosh Hashanah in Simin Tav Kuv Pei Aleph, so he quotes from Pirkei de Rebbe Elazar the following. Tanya Pirkei Rebbe Elazar, Barosh Chodesh Elul, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Moshe, Allah Alai Hahara. So Hashem on Rosh Chodesh Elul called out to Moshe, he said, come up to the mountain once again. This is after Chet HaEgel, after the Luchos were destroyed. And on Rosh Chodesh Elul, Hashem was telling Moshe, come back to the mountain. I need to give you the Luchos Shnios. She'az Allah L'Kaba Luchos Achronos, V'he'eviru Shofar B'machane. So at that moment, the Torah quotes, the shofar was blown, and Moshe ala lahar shelo yitu od acher avodas galulim. And that as the shofar was being blown and Moshe was going up, they were trying to make sure that they never did avodah zarah again. VeKadosh Baruch Hu nis'ala be'oso shofar, and Hashem was lifted through that blowing of the shofar. Shenamar Allah Elokim betruva vegomer, and that is a pasuk that we say in the parak of Tehillim right before we blow the shofar. It's in the middle. It's Tehillim Mem Zion, Allah Elokim Betrua, that Hashem is uplifted through this trua of the people during the time when Moshe was reascending Har Sinai. So then the Torah says, Lachain Hiskinu Chazal Shia Tokim Barosh Chodesh Elul Bekol Shana V'Shana Kol HaChodesh. So because of that, Chazal were metakin, we have a minog that we should blow the shofar throughout the entire month of Elul. Kidei lahazir Yisrael shiyasu tshuva, in order that we should do tshuva. So there's a few questions on this tour and his presentation. The first, and I think most striking, is that the tour is a halacha sefer, and very rarely, if almost almost never at all, does the tour indulge or give us this flowery, poetic explanation for a mitzvah. Usually, the tour following the Rambam and the Gemara will say, Here's the mitzvah, here's the halacha, here's with the source, here's the dinim of that mitzvah. He doesn't really present us with an explanation, and certainly not this lengthy explanation. There are three times where the Torah does do so. So in Tzitzis, Tefillin, and Sukkah, the Torah does give a very lengthy explanation. But the reason why he gives a very lengthy explanation is explained. Because the Bach was very bothered. Why is the Torah doing this? He's a halacha sefer. And the Bach explains very notably and very importantly that in those three areas, Tzitzis, Tefillin, and Sukkah, the Pasuk uses the word Lema'an. So Lema'an means in order that you should know in those three areas. Lema'an Yedu Shebesukkah Sashem Oshafti, for example, that you should know that you sat in a sukkah for a particular reason. And so the Bach says it must be according to the Torah in those three instances. The kavanas hamitzvah, normally you could just have kavana latzeis for a mitzvah. I don't need to think about why I'm doing something. I could just say, my kavana is I'm doing this for Hashem, and that's enough. It's not ma'akev the mitzvah, as long as I'm performing it with the intention to do it for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, except for those three times. Those three times, the Bach says, the kavana is ma'akev. And that's why you have this, just for as a tangent, for sukkah, you have a machlokas about why do we sit in sukkahs? Is it zecher la'nane ha'kavod, or is it sukkahs mamish? So what's the nafkamina? The nafkamina is, what's your kavana? Because according to the Bach, and his understanding of the Torah, the kavana is actually ma'akev. The Gra eventually says, the Mishnah Berurah quotes it, that it's only ma'akev v'dieved, so don't worry. But, you know, the point is, when all the dust settles, that the Torah generally does not give us a very lengthy explanation of something. And when he does, you know, it's a huge chiddush, and the achronim on the side of the Torah pick up on it, and they're bothered by it, and they have to give explanations for why the Torah did that. So why is the Torah here giving us this, Moshe went up to Har Sinai, and the shofar was blown, and that's supposed to inspire this tshuva, and that's why we blow the shofar throughout Chodesh Elul. It's very uncharacteristic, and we know that it's not even a din d'oraisa, so certainly the kavana is not ma'akev at all. So we wouldn't be able to give the Bach's explanation here. There's no leman that we're talking about. This is a minhag to blow shofar throughout Elul. And the second thing, the second problem with the Torah, and sorry, before I present the second problem, and more than that, is that the Shulchan Aruch, if you read the Shulchan Aruch, he leaves out the entire, he leaves out all of this. He just says, you should blow the shofar, and the Ramah says, and the minhag Ashkenaz is to do it throughout Elul. So it's very clear that the Torah is departing from his normal way of writing. And the second thing is a question asked by the Beis Yosef, which is that the Torah, if you read it carefully, seems to give two explanations for why we blow the shofar. He says, number one, because on Rosh Chodesh Elul, Moshe went up to Har Sinai, and when he went up to Har Sinai to get the Luchos Shnios, they blew the shofar. And then the Torah says, why do we blow for the entire Chodesh Elul? Kidei lahazir Yisrael shiyasu tshuva. Shenemar im yiskau shofar ba'ir. Quoting a pasuk from Amos. So which one is it, asked the Beis Yosef? Do we blow shofar because Moshe went up to Har Sinai and as he did so they blew the shofar? Or is it because it's inspiring tshuva? Which one is it? So the Beis Yosef says it must be it's lav dafka, and he gives different answers, or maybe there was a havamina, you would say this, and the Torah is trying to, you know, militate against that havamina. Fine, but he doesn't really give such a good answer, and again, he gets when the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Torah, he doesn't really add any of these extra fixings. So how do we answer all of this? How do we understand Elul? What is the significance of Rosh Chodesh Elul? Does it have its intrinsic significance? And what's going on in the Torah? So I think all of this could be answered with one important yesod. Maybe the answer is that the Torah is telling us that there are actually two different mechayvim of the shofar, and maybe even two different tshuvas. There's the tshuva of Elul, and then there's the tshuva of the Yamim Noraim. After all, we have to ask, why do we blow shofar the entire month of Elul? It doesn't seem to make sense. Right? The Torah said, why are we blowing the shofar? Because Moshe went up to Har Sinai, and they blew shofar. Okay, so we should blow shofar on Rosh Chodesh Elul. Why are we blowing it throughout the entire Elul? And that's why the Torah says, yeah, you know why we're blowing it throughout the entire Elul? Kidei shiyasir b'tshuva. Because that explanation is an extension of what Moshe did on Rosh Chodesh Elul. In other words, these aren't two separate things, to answer the Beis Yosef's question. Right? These aren't two separate, distinct reasons that the Torah is giving. It's one reason, in that Moshe did something on Rosh Chodesh Elul, which is supposed to inspire a paradigm of tshuva, kidei shiyasir b'tshuva, that we're emulating throughout Chodesh Elul. And that makes a lot of sense. Because the actual makor for blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah is totally different. Yom Teruah Yeh Lachem, it's a different pasuk. There's its own Gzeiras HaKasuv. And so the shofar of Rosh Chodesh is not necessarily the same of the shofar of Elul. And in fact, the Bach, who's a commentary on the side of the Torah, refers to the shofar that the Jewish people blew at the time when Moshe went back up to Har Sinai. He refers to it as the shofar Hamidbar, as opposed to the shofar Rosh Hashanah. These are two separate things. Instead, the shofar of Elul is a call to action. It's a call to personal initiative. It's a call to go back up the mountain and begin forging that reconstitution of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the aftermath of sin, in the aftermath of Chet HaEgel. Whereas Rosh Hashanah might be more about the trembling or the malchios of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the proclaiming HaKadosh Baruch Hu as king, this is meant to mimic Moshe's reascension to Har Sinai and the reconstitution of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, if this is the case, so Elul is not just a preparation for Rosh Hashanah, although of course it serves as that, but it's intrinsically significant. It's providing us with a unique perspective that we're supposed to emulate throughout the month. It's a distinct type of tshuva, which is of a completely different nature. And I think if this is all true, it could help us explain some... What time can I go until, by the way?
Whenever.
Got, yeah? Okay. Awesome. If this is true... 9:30? Okay. Okay. So... Awesome. So, if this is all true, then I think we could explain a very tamua, a very shocking point that we find in the Sefer Achinuch. So, even if what I've said now hasn't made sense yet, this point, even just this makor from the Sefer Achinuch, is very critical to know, and that's something to just keep in your back pocket for the rest of your life. Because the Sefer Achinuch says something shocking that we all need to explain. When I don't do a mitzvah saseh, right, so let's say you're supposed to wear tzitzis, you're supposed to put on tefillin, and I fail to do that command. I don't do a mitzvah saseh. So what do I violate? What do we refer to it as? Any bitul aseh, right? It's a bitul aseh. I've neglected the opportunity. But I didn't do anything negative, right? I was passive. I didn't take the opportunity, right? So what would we say about tshuva? What kind of mitzvah is tshuva? It's a mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah. Okay, let's assume it's a mitzvah, according to Rove. Let's assume it's a mitzvah. Yeah, there's a whole... I didn't want to give that shir. I'm assuming you guys heard it already. But yes, it's true. There's a machlokas about vidoy versus tshuva. But let's assume tshuva is a mitzvah. I would say we would all agree, unless anyone could feel free to disagree, but I would all assume we would agree that it's a mitzvah sase. Right? You're supposed to do tshuva. Yeah? I guess some nods. Yeah, it's a mitzvah sase. So, if I would have to ask, putting this equation together, what would happen if you don't do tshuva? What should it be referred to? Bitul aseh, right? And a lot of people say that. If you don't do tshuva, it's a bitul aseh. The Minchas Chinuch actually says that. He actually goes really far. He says it's the whole thing is a mitzvah kiyumis in the first place. But okay, fine. So, it's a bitul aseh. However, the Chinuch says if you... And this is... Sorry. Let me just backtrack for a second. The Sefer HaChinuch says there's a mitzvah of tshuva all year, right? Some people, Rabbeinu Yonah thinks there's two dinim of tshuva. There's tshuva of all year, and then there's tshuva of Yom Kippur, which has a special nature. But the Chinuch says, no, there's only one mitzvah of tshuva, and it lasts throughout the year. And yet he says, if you don't do tshuva by Yom Kippur, not only is it a bitul aseh, you're over below saseh, which is shocking. How are you over below saseh? You didn't do anything. You just failed to do something. How is it actively doing something wrong? Right, a lo saseh is like I murder someone, chas v'shalom, or I hurt someone, I do something wrong, in an active sense. So how is not doing tshuva a lo saseh? That's the question on the Sefer HaChinuch. And so to answer this question, I'm going to give you some background from some totally tangential sugyas. Also, these are very important to keep in your back pocket. These are just great shas yisodos to have. But just to be clear, I'm just using it to answer this question in the Sefer HaChinuch. In Shas, we find that there are many examples and instances where something can change depending on the context. So, for example, I'm allowed to look at you right now, right? We're making eye contact, or I'm looking around, and that's not an Isser. But in the beginning of Baba Basra, the Gemara talks about something called Hezek Re'iyah, that by invading someone's privacy, by looking, you're actually doing a Maisa Hezek, right? It's not just an Aveira. It's a Maisa Hezek. You could get property damages for someone looking at you when you're not supposed to be looking. And there are many indications that depending on the context of the property in question, so a garden versus a chatzer versus a bias, there's going to be various levels of what the Maisa Hezek is and what the repercussions of that is. And the reason why that is true is because depending on a certain context of expectations, the halacha could change. So right now, no one expects privacy. We're in public space. So there's no Maisa Hezek by looking at anybody. But when you're in your house and there's an expectation of privacy and there's a Kedushas Yisrael aspect to that, and you're not supposed to, you know, be looking into someone's home, so then looking into someone's home is not just a bad thing, it's actually an active Maisa Hezek because of the expectation that you're not supposed to be doing that. Good? So that's one. A second one, this might be a little clearer, is something very important called Poshea Kimazik. So there's, you know, Dalid Shomrim. What Masech did you guys learn last year?
Shabbos.
Okay. So, but it's important to know that the Dalit Shomrim and the various Dinim. So there's, you know, there's Ones and there's another thing called Poshea. So Poshea is when I'm negligent. And everyone agrees that a Shomer Chinam, so let's say this is a Shomer, I didn't pay him anything, he's doing me a solid. So a Shomer Chinam is Chayav if he is Poshea, if he's negligent. So the Rishonim try to figure out why is that true. And the Rambam gives a very shocking answer to that. The Rambam tells us that the reason why a Shomer Chinam is Chayav, if he is Poshea, if he is negligent, he is responsible for the damages, is because Poshea Kimazik. Being negligent equals Mazik. What is Mazik? Mazik means active damage, means the act of Pshia, which is passive and just ignorance, is tantamount to actively hurting something or damaging something, which is shocking. Because number one, the Nesivos asks this, Poshea is not a Maisa. It's not Maisa Hezek. It's Grama. You caused something to happen. You didn't actively do anything. So how could you call Poshea Mazik? And another question is the Ravid who asks, hold on a second. In general, we know that there's a something called Bailav Imo. That, let's say I'm normally responsible for a certain Hezek. So I'm let's say I'm the type of Shomer that's responsible for Onus. But now, if the Baal is there, Baal of Imo, I'm not responsible anymore. And that makes a lot of sense, because when the Baal's there, I'm not really the Shomer so much. So if the Baal's not there, I'm responsible. But if he is there, so I'm not as responsible anymore. The Baal should have also been making sure that everything was taken care of and everything was in order. So the Ravid asks on the Rambam, so hold on a second. If you say Poshea equals Mazik, meaning that the reason why you're chayav for Poshea is because you're doing a Maisa Hezek, so then why would Baal of Imo change anything, right? Let's say I actually physically damage something. I break something, I rip something apart. It doesn't matter who's present. I'm chayav for a Maisa Hezek. It doesn't matter if the Baal's there or it isn't there. So if there's a tour of Baal of Imo, or there's supposed to be, but you're explaining that Poshea is Kimazik, you've gotten rid of the Ptur for Baal of Imo. Because anytime you do a Maisa Hezek, you're Chayav, it doesn't matter who's present. So that's the Ravid's question. So how do you explain the Rambam on Poshea Kimazik? Right, so the basic question is, it's just not an action. And the second one is, you get rid of the Ptur Baal of Imo. So Rav Rosenzweig wanted to answer that it depends on the context. That when the Baal is not there, and you are given a responsibility over the item in order to watch it, you have a job, you have a responsibility. And so, by not doing that responsibility, you weren't just active. You weren't just, passively negligent, I was poshea. It was as if you were mazik, you were doing something actively wrong. Because the expectation was that you were supposed to act in a certain way, and failure to do so is not just passive neglect, it's active damage. And so when that answers why it's not just grama, right? It's not just passive. And also, why is there no question of the Ravid? What about Baal of Imo? Because now when the Baal is there, so it's not Mazik anymore. Because once the Baal comes back, the expectation you have and responsibility you have as a Shomer, it just falls by the wayside. And so, you're right. Sometimes Poshe is Kimazik, but it's not a hard, fast rule that always applies. It depends on the context. It depends on the expectations. And the same thing is true. We could use this Yisod to answer the Chinuch. And how do we understand the Sefer HaChinuch? You're right. Normally, throughout the year, tshuva is an asay, and failing to do tshuva when you're supposed to is a bitul asay, because you didn't actively do anything wrong. I didn't hurt anyone. I didn't do an aveira. I just failed to do a mitzvah asay. But there are what the Sefer HaChinuch is telling us is that there are certain times throughout the year where there's a higher expectation, where Hashem is gifting you this opportunity to do tshuva. How did we start? Dushu Hashem b'hin tza'o. That refers also to Elul, or at least to Rosh Hashanah, Aser Simei Tshuva, and Yom Kippur. And so in that moment, Hashem is giving you a greater opportunity, and there's therefore a responsibility and expectation that you're supposed to do tshuva, to become closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so by not doing that, by failing to fulfill the expectation of responsibility, which you have at that time, you have not only been nevatel en asei, you have actively done something wrong as an affront to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and is therefore tantamount to a lo sase. And so I think this fits very nicely with what we've been saying throughout this year and from the beginning, that there's a certain character to Elul Zman, as we call it in yeshiva. Right? It's not just the lead-in to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. It's not just a preparation pragmatically or mentally or spiritually. It's much more than that. It represents, as an introduction, the most complete way of doing the tshuva of Elul Zman, which is the emblem of Moshe reascending Har Sinai, trying to repair his relationship in Klal Yisrael's with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're mimicking that relationship signified by the shofar which they blew at that time and which we blow throughout the month of Elul in order to inspire us to follow in the footsteps of Moshe and to begin forging a path towards forgiveness. And it therefore represents a unique time where there's a higher expectation and responsibility for us to do tshuva. Had Elul just been the normal 30-day period before a holiday like all the others, so then maybe not doing tshuva at that moment wouldn't have been tantamount to a lo sase. But because there's this higher expectation of a special time that starts right now, it becomes something much greater. And so I think I'm gonna end there. I know I'm a little early, but Emir Hashem will continue in future weeks. Like I said, for those who came just after we started, I'm going to hopefully try to go through. This was a tshuva week because I figured it was appropriate for Elul Zman and the beginning of the Zman. But in future weeks, I want to go through sugyas in Ora Chaim, which is like the first chelak of the Dalet Chalakim of the Torah in the Shulchan Aruch, and really present us with kind of like this, going through the dinim and trying to analyze and present the lumdus of them, but also giving us a perspective on how that helps us relate to those topics. So we'll talk about brachos, birchas haTorah, birchas shavoda, birchas hanen. We'll talk about tzitzis, tefillin. We'll talk about tefillah. We'll talk about also some holidays that come up. So Shavuos and Pesach, and today we spoke about tshuva. And definitely we'll have an opportunity to hopefully grow together, learn together. And if you can't make it for 1 week, it's not the worst thing in the world. I understand Thursday nights. People are up very late, so don't worry about it. Each week stands independently. So if you miss one or two or three or four, just feel free to pop back in. Or if you hear of someone who's like, oh man, I haven't been going to the Chaburas all year, and now all of a sudden I just heard about them, and it's the end of the year, it's the last week, I'm so embarrassed, I don't want to show up just for the last week, tell your friend, they can show up for the last week. They're all independent, so don't worry about it. Okay. Shkoyach.